And good morning to you, Mr. Secretary Tom Shedler.
Good morning, Jim. Glad to be back with you.
It's good to talk with you. These elections, unfortunately, generally don't get big turnouts. Do you have a forecast for Saturday?
Yeah, Jim, I think it's going to be less than 20%. You know, when you look at historic data, you'll come up with a number between 20 and 24. But quite frankly, you're dealing with a Memorial Day weekend. We were down about 1,000 votes from the original election here on early voting. So all the indications are below 20. And that's certainly disappointing, but, you know, it is what it is. And that's why I've been so much against these outlier elections like this. It just doesn't serve the public well. But nonetheless, we have to make the replacement, and forced us to have this election as an outlier by itself.
Is there any other way it could be done?
Well, you know, I have been promoting for some time now that we should move to a system similar to local governments that they use, with an appointment process to get you to a larger election cycle. But, you know, you ran into a situation this time where you had the session at play with representation questions and issues. By the time Troy Brown actually resigned, it was too late to get on that March election. So it forced us to have the election in April. And then, of course, with 13 people originally, we knew for sure we'd have a runoff, and it put us out here by ourselves. But, you know, we have a process for military, National Guard, Reserve individuals that there's an appointment made. You know, I've given the example during my appropriation and Senate finance examples that we put in a budget request for $75 million, which would have been one of our lowest budget requests in 10 years. And I was forced at the last minute then to go and up that to $80 million, which put us on par with the last 4 years, because we have to have a treasurer's election, which we didn't anticipate this year. So, you know, it was a prime example and a way for me to illustrate just what it costs the taxpayers for these elections that everybody just takes for granted and calls it at a whim. But nonetheless, that's the process, and we have made great strides over the years. I think I know in your show I've mentioned before, we did a study back from 05 to 10, 60 months. We had 70 elections in Louisiana in 60 months, highest in the country. But when I looked at the next 60 months, based on some legislation we had proposed, we dropped that number down to 31. And I'm proud to tell you, if we can hold the line for the next year and a half, 22 months, we'll be at 25. So we've made great strides, but there's still a way to go.
The treasurer's election, which you referenced, is for the seat that John Kennedy vacated when he became a U.S. senator. That's primary October. Is that the way it will work?
Yes, sir, that is correct, and a runoff, if necessary, in November. And, you know, on point with that, Jim, what I've mentioned to people, you know, we have a very talented individual who is in that seat right now in the interim position, Ron Henson, who was a department for years and actually was the man running it. He's been in the position and will hold that position until someone's elected for some 11 months. So I've often asked people, would anybody really care if that individual, or Mr. Henson in this case, kept that position to the spring, when we could pony onto an election that was already called and save the taxpayers $5.2 million? And I think the answer resoundingly is yes. You could put that in the top. You could put that in road improvements. You could parlay that with Medicaid issues and build that up to a $20 million number. So we've got to start thinking that way. And I will tell you that things are changing, evidenced by that number I just gave you, the reduced elections in five-year periods. But nonetheless, we got a little bit ways to go.
877-217-5757 is your number for Secretary of State Tom Shedler. He'll be with us for first half of the show, and then we'll hear from Dr. Katara Williams, who's heading the Highway Safety Commission. But Tom Shedler mentioned the treasurer's election, and here's a question at talklouisiana.org from Kristen in the Garden District, asking about whether there will be a special election for the Public Service Commission seat that has been vacated abruptly by Scott Angell.
Jim, the good news on that is that since we're now having that election, we'll be able to pony on to that October, November. So There is some silver lining in that. We already have it because of the treasurer's issue. We'll just add that to it.
Okay, so we'll have a treasurer's race and a PSC race.
PSC for that district that
Scott Nigel
is vacating. Yes.
Okay. 877-217-5757. And now the issue that we brought up at the beginning of the show, President Trump has signed an executive order establishing a commission to review alleged voter fraud and voter suppression in the American election system. Vice President Pence, who was in this area yesterday, and Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach have announced or were announced as the chair and vice chair of the Presidential Commission on Election Integrity. Now, the Kansas Secretary of State has been at the forefront, along with Mr. Trump, of saying that there's massive voter fraud in this country and that millions of illegal votes were cast on November 8th. Tom Shedler, based on what you know, I think in our prior conversations, you have come to a different conclusion.
Well, that's correct. I mean, you've heard, and of course, although I was that national president for a year and a half ago, when I speak to that, I speak to Louisiana. I think that it's probably an overplayed comment. I stand on the integrity of the process in Louisiana. I would never say that there's not some incidents, but quite frankly, it's not to the magnitude of what I'm hearing on a national basis. The commission, quite frankly, I welcome the commission, quite frankly, Jim, from this reason. From the line of work we're both in, this argument of voter fraud, whether it exists or it doesn't exist, or voter suppression, does it exist or it doesn't exist, has been bounced around for years. And it's quite frankly an opportunity, in my opinion, to put this argument to sleep once and for all. I guess it's kind of like the investigation going on in Washington that we hear on every news channel constantly, 24/7. Let's get it over with. Let's have the decision made. Let's everybody accept whatever the outcomes of that may be. But in my opinion, you mentioned Kris Kobach. I know all these people on the commission very well. Kris is somewhat I hate to describe him like this, the lightning rod, so to speak, because he's been the one that's been out there with this. But he's a good guy. I know him. But the rest of that commission is all quality people, both from the Democratic side and the Republican side. They're good, level-headed people that are down the middle on issues and call it like they see it. So I'm very confident that at the end of the day, the group of people that they've assembled will come to a reasonable conclusion that's going to be sound and make some sense. And, as you pointed out, I mean, Mr. Kobach, or Secretary Kobach, has gotten the lion's share of the criticism, but I think you would agree. I have not seen anybody criticize any other members of that commission. They're good quality people, from the main secretary to Ms. McCormick, who's on the EAC.
The New York Times, when the commission was formed last week, wrote, voting fraud is extremely rare. In-person fraud, the only kind that would be caught by voter ID laws, is essentially non-existent, as study after study has shown. As for foreigners, a new study of local elections in 42 jurisdictions turned up a total of about 30 cases of suspected non-citizen voting last November out of more than 23 million votes cast. So you're talking about the money for a special election. I guess the question is, here we are, a country with a huge debt, $20 trillion. Can we really afford this kind of luxury when apparently voting fraud is not a huge issue in this country right now?
Well, I guess I'll come back to my opening comment. Can we afford it? No. There's a lot of things we can't afford, but, Washington, D.C. has shown a propensity to just spend money on these types of issues. We can make a list, 2 feet thick of those projects, but I guess it's just the American system. Everybody clamors for, studies on this and that. And I can only tell you that I myself and my staff spend an inordinate amount of time on the phone with individuals, whether it be from the left side of the argument or the right side of the argument, that are convinced of the conspiracy one way or the other. It makes no difference what data or statistics you give them. They're still going to argue with you to that point. So I guess it goes back to, I just want to put closure to it. Of course, I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, because even with that, you'll still have people that won't believe that the study was a fix, on a fix. But it's just the world we live in.
The listener asks whether it would be easier to corrupt the voting process in another state that doesn't have the machines that we have in Louisiana.
Well, I don't disagree with that potential comment. I stand on our system. We have, and I know it's a lightning rod discussion, and I know you and I, Jim, have had this on numerous shows. I mean, we do have a photo ID, and I fully accept the argument that, well, even when we do audits of the affidavit, that we find no wrongdoing or very limited. But I do think it is a deterrent, and I'm going to give the example, not to take a hit on Oregon, but Oregon has a system where it's an automatic registration, meaning when you turn 18 and motor vehicle department automatically registers you to vote, you have to opt out in 2 weeks. It's an all-mail ballot state, so everybody for motor vehicles gets mailed a ballot to that address, and all those ballots come back mail, no photo ID. They have machinery or equipment purportedly that can read a signature, but I think we all know people's signatures to some degree change, whether it be from a health issue, from someone with Parkinson's or some other disease, or just your signature changes over years with age. But nonetheless, that's the system they use. But whereas I'm saying to you, I would be a little uncomfortable certifying that election. That is the process that the individuals and voters of Oregon have picked, just as in New Hampshire and the like. So the strength of the system is in the system of the states. It's a states' rights issue. It's under the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, that the time, place, and manner of election shall be determined by the states. We have a system that fits the voters of Louisiana that we've accepted. Mississippi may have a different system. But you and I have also talked about, you know, when we went through that issue of the Homeland Security based on potential Russian hacking, they moved us into critical infrastructure. I think it was an overplay and overreach by the federal government to do that, because you would never ever want to nationalize elections, because then you would give a hacker or someone a single point of entry with 50 systems all identical. The strength of the system today is those 50 different systems. Mm-hmm. It makes it almost impossible for someone to really go in and affect a national election in this country, in my opinion. The concept of Russian hacking was the most ridiculous argument of all, because the concept was that we're going to hack something in cyberspace. No state votes on the Internet. So how do you hack something that's not in cyberspace? The argument with the Russians on all the other issues of affecting it indirectly, or the email issue, that's a whole different argument. So it is a complicated subject, and individuals who don't deal with this daily, I can understand the confusion of how it's all put into one bailiwick. But we could devote a 2-hour show to this subject, no quite doubt. Frankly.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Secretary Tom Shedler.
Good morning. Yes, Secretary Shedler, was there any effort on the part of the Republican legislators back when Jindal was governor, but after the Supreme Court on a 5-4 vote gutted the Voting Rights Act, to do like in North Carolina and other states with Republican government, to suppress the voting rights of African Americans, Hispanics, and young voters?
No, sir.
All right. This North Carolina situation, I think that Dan is referring to, was the subject of a landmark decision from the Supreme Court on Monday. Two congressional districts in North Carolina were, on a 5-3 vote by the court, ruled to be racially gerrymandered, and surprisingly, the deciding vote in the case was cast by the conservative Clarence Thomas. Does this have any implications in Louisiana?
Well, I mean, the only minority district we have congressionally is Congressman Cedric Richmond, so that would be the one that could be potentially challenged, I guess, on the basis of that Supreme Court decision. But you know, I want to point out that the very person who headed that up, I think it was Eric Holder, the former Attorney General, you know, when he was Attorney General, the Department of Justice, to prove those two districts. And let's look back at the history on this whole issue. You know, the whole issue of gerrymandering for districts, whether it be the old Cleo Fields district in Louisiana, the old Zorro district, or the district that I speak of, Cedric Richmond, it goes from eastern New Orleans up through St. Charles, St. John, and into even parts of Baton Rouge. If you go back in history, those districts were done with everybody's blessing and mandated by the federal government to create minority districts. So now we've come full circle, and we're saying that there's too many minorities in one district. I get that, and I'm going to throw something out that just food for thought for everybody listening audience here. Isn't that probably why we have the gridlock in Congress that we currently have? If you think about it, we have created 435 districts across this country that were fueled by the whole argument 20 to 30 years ago. And we now have created little pockets of districts that are dedicated Republican district, dedicated Democratic district, dedicated African-American district. And we wonder why, when these 435 people go to Congress, that they vote in these little silos and we got the gridlock we have. There is no incentive for a congressman, unless he or she wants to be governor of their state or run for U.S. Senate, to placate any wishes of the neighboring district. They're just going to vote exactly the way their little Pollyanna district is, no matter which way it may be, to satisfy their voters, because if they don't, they won't return in 2 years. So I'm all for, quite frankly, districts that are a little bit more balanced. But with that, be careful what you ask for if you're on one side of this equation, because it could backfire on you. But the bottom line is, if you have a district that's close to 50%, that congressman has to really vote he or she's conscience instead of just voting down party lines in order to satisfy that district on any given day to make sure in 2 years he or she can be elected with 50% plus one. But when you have these districts like they are now that were created with everyone's blessing 20 or 30 years ago, and you had the arguments and the court decision has gone completely 180 degrees, we've now moved from that. And in a way, I guess that's healthy. I'm actually glad to see it. But there is another side to this argument. And as far as the caller we had just a moment ago, you know, I remember after the Shelby case bringing my entire staff into the office and indicating to them, look, we're not going to do one thing different today than we did pre-Shelby, because we were one of the pre-clearance states. And if you notice, you've never seen Louisiana touted in any of these articles. We've had North Carolina, we've had Texas and various other states. Louisiana's never been mentioned in that because we were on a sound system. And then the second part of that equation is that, you know, I'm the guest today, but the Secretary of State's office has absolutely zero to do with drawing congressional lines or legislative lines. It's done by legislative process based on the census. We merely implement the elections in those districts that have been set.
Right. Tom Shedler, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay, Jim. Thank you.